Welcome to the 27th episode of Zero Hour Strikes, the show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event Zero Hour Crisis in Time, every issue, every tie-in, and now every zero issue. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
And in this episode, we look at the Justice League titles, Justice League America, Justice League Task Force, and Extreme Justice.
Love it.
Even though that last one actually came out months after Zero Month.
Really?
Yeah, it took like a couple of extra months, as we'll see. But it's still a number zero, and I guess that explains why it doesn't have the 0 month banner, the new beginning banner, you know.
Yeah, okay, so they were extremely late.
But it's still replacing Justice League International, so yeah, okay. I'm considering it part of 0 month, even though it was like a sort of delayed. It's one of the new series that's coming out at DC. We're counting it. We're doing Justice League anyways. Might as well get a full picture.
Yeah, good idea.
So we talked about JLA, we'll start with that one, before, and how it was going down the tubes. This was DC's chance to turn their big team book around. Not sure if taking the writer off the equally bad Justice League International and putting him on this book instead was going to help, and vice versa for that matter. But here we are. Issue zero falls between numbers 92 and 93 of the series. It would be canceled by 113 to make way for Grant Morrison's JLA. And I know Grant Morrison was probably not ready, you know, didn't have the idea yet or hadn't gotten a green light on this or anything. But I feel like it should have come 2 years earlier to save the Justice League franchise at this point.
Oh, well, yeah, because that's when they brought the big seven together again. So, yeah, that was that would have made a bigger impact, I think, than Justice League Extreme.
With Justice League America, we still get a new roster, but it's still the same kind of feeling, as we'll see. Let me get into a synopsis here. League America number zero by a writer who should not be named, Chuck Wojciechowicz and Bob Dvorak. It's called Home Again. Since Wally West came back from the time stream, he's been feeling isolated, so an invitation to join the Justice League, which had recently been disbanded, is right on time. As it turns out, Wonder Woman has decided to reform the team as a place for superheroes to feel like they belong somewhere, and she sets up shop in the villainous alien Overmaster's ship in orbit around the Earth. She recruits the Flash, Hawkman, Fire, Metamorpho, Crimson Fox, and from Infinity Inc., junior members Nuklon and Obsidian. Blue Beetle also shows up, but he's really a robot trying to hack into the ship, and which can adapt to every leaguer's abilities. They defeat it, and it turns into a puddle of goo, leaving the league with its first mystery. That's it in brief. Maybe we can talk about the cover, and through the cover, talk a bit about the art.
Yeah.
What did you think of this one?
A nice little action moment. We don't know what's going on, and we recognize a lot of people. So I think the cover's not that bad, really. You know, there's like movement going from left to right. So there's something about going forward in this. And of course, Hawkman is on the cover, so that's always a thing. But it's a weird mix and match of superheroes, and I kind of liked it.
It's a bit busy for me because you got all this like debris in the background and the foreground, and I guess we're inside like I don't even know. It's supposed to be the inside of the ship, but
yeah.
It also kind of looks like debris, but it isn't. So that's kind of busy for me. But I'll say this about the art. I like it. I think it's pretty, but it's... Everybody looks a little bit like an action figure. There's a certain glossiness to it. You know, action figure or doll-like faces, which is attractive, but I don't think it's dynamic in the way that a Justice League book should be. Or very often in this, I'll find the action very hard to follow. I don't know, like the fight scenes don't really pop.
Yeah.
It all ends like after that Blue Beetle robot attacks everyone and has like different little moments with them. Eventually, like the big solution is to just jump them. And like if we use teamwork, it's like the end of every damn Fantastic Four movie, which I find very trite and awful. But it's like if we work together and we all use our powers at the same time on this guy, he can't adapt to us all and we're going to beat him. And that is shown, like that moment of the fight is just them jumping him in one panel. It's one panel, and we don't even see like the conclusion of that. It's like next panel, he's beaten. So it's like it cuts away when it's starting to get interesting. So in terms of action, I don't think the art is up to standards for, especially for the Justice League, which I think should be an action title.
Yeah, I agree.
Saying that, you know, knowing that it's been a comedy title and everything. But at this point, when it's supposed to be pure superheroics, especially when there are, you know, a lot of characters already have their own titles, and it should be about the action more than the soap opera, more than the whatever. So the action has to be crisp. I don't think it is here, even though it's cute. I guess that's what I think of the art. It's cute.
I think there's a lot to do with the inking. Mm-hmm. The inking is very basic and, dare I say, naive. It kind of feels too basic and too fat. And there's this one panel where Wonder Woman has her head is just like completely off. Just after when they just beat the puddle robot there, there's this panel where Wally or The Flash says, "You saved the day, pal," to Obsidian. And Wonder Woman's head is not where a head should be.
I agree. It's like,
it's weird.
It's falling down into her cleavage the way, like a bent neck. There's a couple of weird bent necks here and there.
Yeah.
And you were struggling with the page number because there's a space for the page number.
Yeah, but there's no page number.
And there's no number. It's like they've created a little indent where the page number would go, and then the letterer didn't put it there. Odd.
Very odd. But yeah, I agree. I mean, the art is cute, but also inconsistent. And we see stuff that doesn't really matter, but I think they wanted to put in there, like Hawkman's wings that go back in his harness, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, Hawkman's actual hawk eyes. And these are things that I don't think they're necessary right now. And I mean, the whole comic book is just too busy. Everybody seems to have a motive. We get these little tidbits of motives, but we really don't get them. So there's maybe just too much mystery. Maybe fan it out a bit. I don't know.
Well, you got to introduce a whole roster, and they want to give a little bit of interest to everyone. But I'll agree in the sense that, like, the characters that we need to know about are not the ones that have their own books. Like, it's fine to find out what is going on with Nuklon and Obsidian and why they want to join this team and how everybody reacts to these kids, because, like, the Infinity Inc. is sort of like the Teen Titans to the JSA, you know?
Yeah.
So that's fine. These are characters that we don't know well, and they don't have their own book, you know? Similarly, we want to know why Fire wants to join this team. We want to know why Crimson Fox, you know, if there's like a mystery with Crimson Fox because she's acting strange about her sister who's supposed to be dead. And now we're wondering what the hell, if anyone is still following the Crimson Fox story that started in Justice League Europe way, 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 way back. It's there, and that's fine. But we spend so much time with characters that have their own books, namely The Flash.
Yeah.
That could have been used for, like, why? Okay, here's my big, 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 giant problem with this comic, and it's the writing. And it's a Flash whining about not fitting in, you know, in an era where he had like this huge extended family around him in his own book, where there are a lot of other speedsters. Nobody knows how I feel. I can't talk to anyone who's like me. What do you mean? You're palling around with Jay Garrick. You're palling around with Max Mercury. You're palling around with Impulse. You've got this big family around you, and it's whiny Wally.
Yeah, well, it feels like somebody didn't read the Mark Waid part of Wally West's.
Just the fact that Chunk, like, he goes to a party and Chunk is there. Well, that's a character from the whiny Wally years.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
So I agree. It's like somebody wasn't up to speed, and it was like basing their characterization on an earlier version.
Exactly. And there's a lot of pages dedicated to Wally in this book. I mean, the book isn't that long, but, you know, six pages that it's basically only Wally. And that's a lot.
He's struggling with why should he join the league? I feel like that's a character that shouldn't be asking that question. If he wants to join the league, it's his legacy. You know, there was a Flash in the original league. There will be a Flash again. The Flash belongs in the league. And we shouldn't spend six pages about, oh, should I join the league? Why would I join the league? It's where I could find my people when he's in a book surrounded by other superhumans. Like, of all the characters,
he's a bad character to lean on to introduce this new team. I mean, we probably should have been going with either Fire. She was in the last Justice League before this part, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or the Infinity Inc. guys, who are basically just left to their own. These characters would have been a lot richer to get into this new Justice League. I mean, we see Wonder Woman a lot, but she doesn't do much.
She decides to reassemble the team, okay? And this is another, like, okay, the Flash is really badly written. Wonder Woman is equally badly written. She went to Mount Rushmore to relive, that's what she says, to relive Overmaster's defeat. What the hell is that? And then she found out, oh, the ship is there. And how about we use this ship as a clubhouse? That's the word she uses, clubhouse. Like she's a legionnaire or something. It's like, it completely makes no sense with the post-crisis Wonder Woman to even think that. And she's into celebrity gossip and also not in character, you know, the fact that that she thinks the Justice League should be like group therapy.
Yeah.
Like, not only is the Flash thinking, I need someone to talk to about who I am. It's like, we know how that ended up in Heroes in Crisis. but then she creates exactly the kind of team he's looking for. One that's just about belonging. Like, they're the freaking X-Men. Like, it makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
No sense at all. So the writing of these two characters, who have their own books, I've always been... at least in our imagination, part of the Justice League. I know Wonder Woman wasn't in the original League post-crisis, but still, you know, we imagined these people as, you know, when you look at that cover, you say, okay, yeah, the real Justice League members, Wonder Woman, Flash, Hawkman.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody else is like a late comer or a total newbie. You know, so it's it's so frustrating. This is the new era for the League. Oh, it's going to be touchy-feely. We're a group therapy thing, and it's just about having a clubhouse. And even that base doesn't make any sense. Like, we're going to use a villain's spaceship that nobody understands how it works. You open a door, there's a monster behind there. Oops. And it's flying around the Earth, and you can only get picked up every so many hours when it passes by.
Yeah, it's stupid.
So how is that going to work? It's not like, okay, there better be a crime under the ship or else we'll never be doing anything. And every time we have a meeting, we have to wait for the ship to cycle back to our location. It's absurd.
It's absurd.
Why? Why? And even like the Overmaster's ship. Obviously, this defeat of his happened a little earlier in the Justice League books. Even the birth of this character, he was a villain. He's the villain at the head of the Cadre, which... was a Justice League Detroit villain.
Oh, my.
So it's not even like, it's like two bad eras of the Justice League speaking to one another and becoming this third era that is potentially even worse. I don't know. You know, it's like, you have to be at Mount Rushmore, Flash, at 9:17. It's like, or else you'll miss the boat. Like, if every meeting is like this, like the Flash is well positioned because...
Oh, yeah. Well, he can be there.
Yeah, he can be there. But it's like, everybody's got to follow these kinds of rules.
How is Metamorpho going to get there? I mean...
He's got to... Yeah, exactly. He's better live right under the ship. Or live inside the ship totally because Metamorpho doesn't have a life. You know, that's what they're kind of expecting of some of these. Oh, man. And then when you want to disembark, it's going to be another big... It doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe in the future issues, they can figure out how the ship works a little better. But it's the stupidest idea for a base, for a superhero base. Yeah. It's like, let's go back to the satellite era, which a lot of people love. It's a far cry from the satellite. So, no, it's so awful. And then at the end, you're supposed to be like a beacon of hope. When people look up in the sky, they see the ship flying by. And they know it's the Justice League. I don't know how they know this because it used to be Overmaster's ship. And then, you know, villains are just saying, well, oh, good. Now, the ship just passed by. I can do my thing now.
Yeah, exactly. Let's time ourselves now. Rob that bank.
It's so awful. And we say, like, the mission is, the point of the League is belonging and group therapy. I'm sort of being facetious because it's not like they say that exactly. But from this... issue, what is the point of the League? Oh, well, figuring out the mystery of the spaceship. You know, let's explore the ship. Seems to be their main mission.
It's very dumb.
Yeah.
It's very dumb. And it kind of feels like they're trying to do an action version of the Bwahaha Justice League. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's clanky. The rhythm is off. The action is non-existent. There's fighting, but cameras all over the place. It's just not that good. It's colorful, but it's not good.
One subplot we didn't talk about is Fire's subplot. I don't know what it's about, but she seems to... Did you get the same impression that she's like looking for someone to father her child or something?
She looks like somebody who's looking for a mate. Yes.
It's icky.
Yeah, it's awkward.
Awkward. Yeah. Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But what would you think of, like, okay, now we've read the issue and we didn't particularly like it, and it's certainly not going to turn the Justice League around as history's shown. But what do you think of this lineup in general? Like, would this be, like, say it's well written, is this a pretty good Justice League lineup?
I don't hate it. I'm not mad at it. Of course, we have powerhouses in here. We have Wonder Woman, who could have a major role as a leader in this. She could be the Wonder Woman we all love. We have Wally, who's, well, the speedster. We don't really have the smart one. Metamorpho is probably the closest to the smart one. We have, you know, a lot of brawn. We have a lot of muscle. We have Hawkman. We have Nuklon. I like that there's at least three ladies in there, but I don't think Obsidian... It would be one of my choices for...
I wonder if he'd come out as gay yet at this point. Because that would at least have that, you know, that bit of diversity to it.
As far as being the superhero, I'm not a big fan of Obsidian. But, I mean, at least he had a kind of cool power set. But, I don't know.
I'm not a big fan of the Infinity Inc. in general. I kind of feel like they're a little bit, even though they're all tied to the JSA and older characters, I've always felt like they were a little bit like the Teen Titans or a little bit like the Outsiders. It's like a role-playing game team with the different power sets are all represented so that you can make stories work. But I've never really read them much. So, I'm speaking as someone who hasn't read a lot of Infinity Inc. They just never interested me much, despite my interest in Earth 2 characters.
Same here. I'm a big Justice Society fan, but Infinity Inc., not that much.
Yeah, and they don't really relate to Hawkman the way they should. I feel like they're not part of Hawkman's legacy, but this Hawkman has the... You know, the JSA Hawkman in him.
Yeah.
So I would have wanted like a little bit of a scene for that. I'm looking at the cover now and I'm thinking, you know what? There's a lot of characters that are the same in here. There's not enough contrasts because you say like there are three ladies. They're all sort of warrior types. Wonder Woman's the calm center of this, but she's a warrior. And the way that Fire is played is very often as a sort of, she's the sexy warrior. And then Crimson Fox... Yeah. Is the Savage Warrior. And then Savage Warrior, that's also Hawkman. Hawkman and Crimson Fox are kind of the same power set. You know, one's on the ground, one's in the air, but it's kind of the same. So
animal-based.
Yeah, there's a lot of... Like, Metamorpho is the most versatile here, but he's just about the only one. So there's, like, components of Infinity Inc. and components of Justice League Europe, components of Justice League of America. Yeah. So, I don't know. This is not a bad lineup. They could have done something with it. It all ends in tears. And I don't know if Power Girl is going to be part of this lineup at all, but...
Then it just becomes a punchy punch.
Well, this is the series where we're going to find out all that stuff about Power Girl's baby.
Ooh, so the baby nobody asked for.
Right.
I can't wait.
Right. So in Zero Hour, the miniseries itself, we were always going back to Power Girl and she was giving birth during the end of the universe. And what was that going to be like? We've read three Justice League titles for this episode and she's in none of them. But I think she shows up in the next issue of this.
Okay.
So I don't know what happens. Really, I don't care what happens is the thing. But it just seemed like it was such a big deal during Zero Hour. It should have been addressed month one, month zero, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Another annoyance from me here.
So I take it you didn't really enjoy this this Justice League start of the series?
Well, it's disappointing.
Yes, it is.
From the beginning, where we spent so much time with the Flash being... a retrograde version of the Flash. Wally has moved on from this. The motivation makes no sense and is unnecessary. So from there, you've lost me. And then you get on this, you know, it's so absurd as an idea. You haven't shaken things up in the right way. You've just, you know, put things in a mixer. Here's how it comes out. But the result is like, no, this is wrongheaded from every standpoint. And you had a chance to reboot everything, and you just didn't. So based on this one issue, I would certainly not keep reading the Justice League America book. What about you?
No, I really didn't enjoy it. There are some of the characters I do like, some I don't really care for, but in the end, I just really don't care about this Justice League.
Even if we like some of the characters, and obviously I'm a fan of Metamorpho, I'm a fan of the Flash.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you like a character and they're being portrayed badly in a team book, then you don't want to read that team book.
Exactly.
That character is not drawing you to the team book because that's just going to be frustrating. And you're just hoping that there's no crossovers between the main book and the team book. Let's move on to Justice League Task Force.
Ooh.
It's a title we discussed. It had a zero-hour tie-in. All the Justice League titles were connected through that story about Triumph.
Uh-huh.
We are currently between issues 16 and 17. The book would last 37 issues, ending the same month as JL America. There's a line where it's, okay, all the Justice League titles end and Grant Morrison's Justice League starts. Justice League Task Force number 0 by Mark Waid, Sal Velluto, and Jeff Albrecht. It's called The Gathering. Independently of Wonder Woman, it seems, Martian Manhunter has also decided to reform the Justice League as JL Task Force, and he plans to use Professor Ivo's old island HQ of Ivotown as his base. What is wrong with these people? What's with the villain bases? Anyway, he recruits Despero / Elrond, also Triumph, who has been staying at John's apartment, trying to get his life back together, Gypsy, though her new boyfriend, Bronze Tiger, declines the offer, and the Ray. And when they catch up to Ray Terrell, he's fighting a group of armored guys called the Cabal, whose gimmick is that they all have different powers but look the same to confuse opponents. Once the task force has beaten them, Ray joins the team. So, again, we got a cover. The cover shows all the characters.
It's kind of the same thing, only in this one, it's very, very denuded. And we have the Ray doing a big zero in the background. So this is a nice little pinup of everyone. It's kind of weird because the characters, the perspective is a bit weird. So
foreshortening, yeah. Like Triumph is really like big upper body, small lower body because of the intense perspective.
And not everybody's on the same perspective. So it kind of feels like a collage. Because Despero's or Elrond's feet are huge compared to his head.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's weird.
He could fit two heads in each shoe. I mean, no, it's huge. And I mean, he has that head fin. You know, you kind of forgive all of that because it's just a pinup. It's fine. I'll say it's fine.
Yeah, it's only fine. This one doesn't have a background. I like the concept of the Ray flying around and making a big zero for zero issue. And, you know, it's very clean. Also, yeah, Despero is obviously the weakest link. I don't think those boots really connect because his legs are sort of behind Triumph. It just doesn't connect well. We got a new costume for Gypsy that pretty generic to me. I know she never really had a costume before. She just like dressed in a dress. And it's similar here, although she's showing more midriff and et cetera. She's grown up dating Bronze Tiger. And what the hell? It's kind of an odd circumstance. How did these two characters meet? And I don't know. In this one, again, it's like you got Martian Manhunter. It's like an original Justice League member. And this time it's true, even post-crisis. And he's sent out these invitations. And it's like, he's doing the same thing as Wonder Woman.
Yeah, he's recruiting.
But different people. And you know what this made me think? You know, you got like a new team and you're going to spend time recruiting, you know, which isn't what Extreme Justice did. You know, Extreme Justice, they're all together already and we're catching up. In this case, and in Justice League of America, there's recruitment going on and they play it as if we, the readers, are can't wait to see who makes it. But the cover already tells you this. So you're looking at recruitment of characters that you already know are members. I'm reminded of the West Coast Avengers miniseries that started the West Coast Avengers. And on the cover, you had the first issue had on the cover, you had Hawkeye. And Hawkeye was like, the Avengers want you type thing. And we don't know who's going to make it. And they just put a lot of characters' heads all around him. And you got ringers, you know, you got people that are never going to make it. Rom Space Knight's on there. And, you know, like, I don't know, the Red Wolf or something. And then you got some of the characters are going to make it. We just don't know who. So when the issue starts and he recruits people, so, oh, okay. Then you find out naturally and organically who makes it. But the cover doesn't spill the beans. It doesn't spoil you for it. So both these Justice League issues have the same structure where an original League member is going to recruit people, and it's sort of played as a mystery. Ooh, who's going to accept? But you know what? If Bronze Tiger was going to accept, he'd been on the cover. So there's no mystery there. There's just a, oh, I wonder why he says no or why she says yes.
Exactly. This is I think it's a very weak origin story for a group. You know, the recruitment type thing. We could have gone with, you know, everybody's just at the same place at the same time for no reason, really, and they start working together. Anything else would have been nice.
Well, the original Justice League met up because there was like an alien threat, and they all went after that alien threat, and they said, oh, gee, you know, we all went after this common foe, and we work well together, let's stay together. Same thing with the Avengers, right? The Avengers, like Loki did stuff, sent the Hulk, you know, to do some mayhem. You know, everybody faced the same foe, and they said, well, we should stick together and do this team thing. There's not even this here, because everybody knows each other because of crossovers and and everything.
Yeah.
So we can send out invitations for, you know, like, who's going to have the copyright for the Justice League? Apparently no one. Everyone. Yeah. And we still have Triumph in this. He's going to remain a concern. This is the book that's going to cover his story. Triumph was always part of the League. And then on their first mission, or an early mission anyways, he was sent forward in time. And here he is now, a man out of time. And that's always been the history. And Zero Hour had nothing to do with the change, more or less. But he's here to stay. So he's not like Alpha Centurion or whatever, you know, that we saw in the Superman issues.
Yeah.
He's real and he's going to stay. And I like that he's like in John's apartment all this time. John is kind of taking over. It's in Colorado. There's a big Mars globe in the apartment. He really is out of time. Well, he's supposed to be like, what, 10 years out of time or something. You know, it's not like he's a man from the 80s at this point.
Yeah. He's not that bad. He could, 10 years, it's easily fillable.
I think so.
It's only like 3 iPhones. I mean,
and even then, back then, not even that. So, I'm bringing back to what Gypsy, what the heck is Gypsy doing with the Bronze Tiger? Bronze Tiger had a relationship with Vixen when they both served at Suicide Squad. And Vixen was a Justice League Detroit member, as was Gypsy. And it's like, well, does Mari know about this? Or. That's a very strange thing. I guess they want Gypsy to have, like, Gypsy has very weak powers. You know, she can sort of camouflage herself, sort of invisible, sort of imperceptible, maybe the better word. But here, like, the Bronze Tiger has been training her up in martial arts so that she has like a fighting chance. I guess that's the point of that.
I guess the point of this Justice League is basically maybe underdogs. Don't get me wrong. Martian Manhunter is one of the most powerful DC characters ever. And the Ray is pretty much up there also. And I mean, Despero is, well, here he's Elrond, but, you know, and Triumph has a very nice power set, but they kind of feel like they're all B-listers or underdogs, or I don't know what the theme is.
At least they don't get the same respect as other heroes do. Might be it. You know, like a Justice League Detroiter, you know, the Martian Manhunter would be always the seventh wheel in the original Justice League, like the character that didn't have his own series, basically. Triumph is obviously a loser, and Elrond in Despero, that's not an obvious fit. And then you got Gypsy even hating on Despero, even though she knows it's Elrond. Yeah. That's not a good visual for her. She was even under Vibe in terms of power level. In the Justice League. Yeah. Like, for a Justice League member, she's extremely weak. Yeah, I agree. It's kind of, they are B-listers.
Yeah.
At least they get the respect that B-listers would get.
So let's rename this Justice League. Instead of calling it Justice League Task Force, let's call it Rodney Dangerfield's Justice League. Because they can't get no respect.
And even so, Gypsy has a big chip on her shoulder in this. And she doesn't give respect to other heroes. And I mean specifically on page 17. This time they're numbered. And on page 17, she makes a crack about Aquaman. Like a real low blow. Let me find it and read it here.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even say it. She thinks it. She's doing like this Bruce Lee kick kind of thing on one of the Cabal. She thinks, My camouflage skills are awfully tame compared to the powers of, well, everyone else. What were you thinking, that every team needs its Aquaman? So she's comparing herself to Aquaman. Aquaman also built the Justice League Detroit that she was a member of. So she served with Aquaman. Like, Aquaman was her leader.
Come on, Gypsy.
And she was on that team with Aquaman, with Vibe, with Steel, with, you know, but it wasn't all powerhouses. But Aquaman was definitely one of the more professional heroes there.
We all know Aquaman's not a, I mean, he's no pushover.
No. And she should know that.
Yeah, she should.
So it's really like, I don't know. I don't know what Mark Waid is doing here. It's really below par in terms of his superhero writing.
Maybe they're doing this on purpose. So it kind of sounds like they're having problems, or they have this drama and it'll all go away eventually, maybe? I don't know.
Task Force had a pretty pure concept originally. Every team was working for the United Nations. Ultimately, you had one in America, you had one in Europe, you know, etc. And Task Force was supposed to be, okay, for special missions, we're going to assemble some former Justice League members, maybe pick up like a Nightwing or something, experts. It was the goody Suicide Squad. You know, let's go do missions. And then that team only exists for that arc or that one story, and then it's over. So at this point, they're just abandoning all that. And Task Force is just another Justice League. It's got members of former Justice Leagues, and, you know, some characters have their own series. Well, only the Ray, actually, at this point, has his own series of this group.
Yeah. And, I mean, the Ray just looks so cool. Even in this book, he's still cool.
I keep going back to what they did with JLA later. Like, the three books that we're going to cover should have been just the one book, and you put all your best assets in it. And then you make Justice League a thing again. They're coasting off the success of the Bwahaha Justice League. And that point, it was popular enough that, you know, it spawned other series. But now we're just keeping those three series alive. But we've lost, you know, it's been a couple years now since it's no longer the Bwahaha Justice League. And we've lost what makes the franchise special or interesting. And we're coasting off the popularity of comics that were published a couple years before, at least by the end of that era.
Yeah.
And we're just like, okay, let's make sure we've got some popular characters in each group. It's just making comics to have comics on the stands at this point.
It sure does feel like that, yeah.
Still, this may be still a step up from the Justice League America. Would you, based on this issue, keep reading Justice League Task Force?
Martian Manhunter has always been one of my favorite characters, and I really dig the Ray. So I probably would have picked up at least another couple issues.
Okay. Still don't like Elrond in Despero's body. I think is a big mistake, and that's something that should have been undone or not perpetuated by keeping him on the team. So from this issue, even though I was a Mark Waid fan, I don't think I would be picking up Justice League Task Force. I'm just about to put a big cross over every Justice League title. Well, we don't know. We don't know. Maybe Extreme Justice is better than expected. We're going to have to.
Maybe.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait until after this promo break to find out.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as
Martian Manhunter,
Batman,
Dr. Fate,
Black Canary,
Fire,
Ice,
Maxwell Lord,
Oberon,
Captain Marvel,
Rocket Red,
Captain Atom,
Mr. Miracle,
Guy Gardner,
Booster Gold,
Blue Beetle,
Nort,
and many, many more. Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
We're back and continuing our discussion of the zero issues that make up the Justice League franchise. And next is Extreme Justice.
Extreme.
And it replaced Justice League International on the schedule. Didn't come out on 0 month. 0 month held a cover date of October 1994. Extreme Justice has a cover date of January 1995. And it's written by Dan Vado, at least for the first 7 issues, who used to be the writer on the failing JLA book. They just switched writers and they hoped the books would get better. No, that's not how it works. So Extreme Justice obviously traded on the 90s trends and ended up running another 18 issues and ending 1 month before the rest. In JLA, we heard Blue Beetle had gone off with Captain Atom to start something. This is that thing.
Well, now.
Captain Atom and Blue Beetle hanging out together, it could almost have been, oh, let's do all the Charlton heroes, you know, like the pseudo-Watchmen or something. Have the Question and Nightshade and Peacemaker and, you know, work with Sergeant Steel or something. That's not what this is. Let's look at it. Extreme Justice number 0 by Dan Vado, Mark Campos, and Ken Branch. It's called With a Bang. Another Justice League, this one made up of Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, Maxima, and Amazing Man, fly into a missile base in Colorado to stop a mad officer from firing on Russia. After handling the crisis, they head into Nevadans, where Captain Atom knows of an old underground military base called Mount Thunder, which is supposed to be abandoned and forgotten. He wants it as a headquarters because, again, it's like this villainous lair. Except that while it is empty, it's not abandoned, and it's full of high-tech robots and other things. The League defeats the security precautions, but it alerts a General Singe, or his people at least, in Washington, who engineer an armed response. Meanwhile, a villain monologues from the shadows and promises to take back what Captain Atom has taken from him. And then Ronnie Raymond, formerly half of Firestorm, is told he has leukemia and only a short time to live.
Extreme!
Yeah. All the hair in this one. All the hair.
Very much the, they're really channeling the image look. A lot of lines, a lot of angst, a lot of gritted teeth. Terrible hair. There's some terrible, terrible hair.
Oh, terrible hair. Except maybe Amazing Man, who has this high top fade thing.
Not so bad.
All the rest, bad hair.
Everybody's got like a lion mane kind of look. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So what did you think of the cover? And basically, we can talk about the art from there, because it's essentially the same artist, isn't it?
Once again, it's a group pinup thing where they're all busting through a wall. All the hair is there. Booster Gold has this new armor. He has like this weird golden nose. I don't know where that comes from, but Amazing Man looks amazing. Captain Atom looks amazing. And Maxima is pretty good, but I thought her costume was green and yellow.
She's had both. I think when she joined the Justice League, there was like this purple and gold or something. Okay.
Oh, and that's fine. I mean, she's Maxima. She can dress how she wants.
I think Blue Beetle is really the highlight of the cover.
Blue Beetle is channeling his inner Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's a Todd McFarlane Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It's kind of weird.
No, it's all right. Although we're far from the character is supposed to be. I mean, here there is some humor in the dialogue, etc.
Yeah.
It's not wahaha humor, but it's still Beetle and Booster working together with Captain Atom. They've worked together before. And then Maxima is the lone female. And then somehow Amazing Man, who is the grandson of the All-Star Squadron's Amazing Man. And he'd been introduced in the Justice League books like 6 months before Zero Hour. Obviously, Dan Vado wanted to use him at a later date. And this is that later date. Yeah, the bulky armor, that Booster armor. This one's a little better than when it was first introduced. So I've seen worse. But then they also say he has a pacemaker now. Like he died and was... So now he's just Iron Man.
Well, there's a lot of armor going around, or a lot of shiny stuff.
Did you find it difficult to look at and like hard to follow?
Well, yeah, actually, because all the shiny stuff is kind of distracting. I mean, it's not over rendered, but it's overdone, you know, doing all the shiny Captain Atom and all the shiny Booster Gold. It's kind of messy after a while. And even the shiny Amazing Man, everything is metal. Everything is bendable metal for some odd reason. And yeah, it gets distracting. Because, I mean, the book is already very, very busy. You have flames all over the place and debris flying everywhere. I mean, it's extreme.
Yeah, it is extreme. And then you've got, like, even the heroes that can't fly here are wearing these sort of flying skates.
Flying sandals. Flying flip-flops.
Flying flip-flops. And it's just, like, more fire coming out of the more metal, shiny metal around it, more movement, more speed lines. When the Captain Atom races after the nuclear missile, and it's just speed lines, and then the cramped, like really claustrophobic panels that are supposed to show him like in speed and like pushing the limit, and he's just a head in a a panel full of energy, and even that panel is all breaking apart. So it's, like you say, extreme is probably
it's
the
extreme.
Word. But by, you know, when they're surrounded by robots and you just don't know what you're looking at anymore.
Yeah, yeah, it's a jumble.
So in terms of art, it is very much one of the most 90s things that we've looked at, and on purpose.
When panels disintegrate because Captain Atom is going so fast, you can't get any more 90s than that.
And you're right about the busyness as well, because even looking at something, a scene that should be pretty normal, like General Singe talking to a woman called Martha. Martha! A woman called Martha. She's just like she's his assistant, or, you know, she works at the base or whatever. And she's just supposed to be sitting at a desk. Well, that desk has like a jumble of electronics on top of it. And it's complete nonsense. Yeah. You know, this is like no other office ever. it's just there's so much going on. Yeah. A mistake for me is exactly that missile thing where the Captain Atom basically blows up with the missile and absorbs its energy.
Yeah.
Well, normally with a nuke, Captain Atom should have been bumped into next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It forces him to time travel. That's how he got to our time. So, and we've seen that in the Captain Atom comic. That's happened, where he absorbs like a missile, and then he disappears. And they think, oh, Captain Atom's dead. And then he shows up a week later because he was, you know, like whatever, the quantum energy bumps him into the time stream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. Did that change at some point that I don't know about? Or writer doesn't know what he's doing. What is the point of this Justice League? They seem more like an actual Justice League. We've divorced ourselves from Maxwell Lord, etc., from the UN, but we're the Justice League and we're fighting any and all threats. So Extreme Justice is really, although they call themselves the Justice League, you know, like Blue Beetle reclaims that name.
Yep.
No problem. Kind of shocks Captain Atom. I don't know if he wanted to do another name. And Captain Atom is aware that Wonder Woman has her own team. He doesn't seem to know about Martian Manhunter. So maybe the task force is like the secret Justice League. Nobody knows is doing stuff. And then the public Justice League is the Wonder Woman's. But she's taken the tack of Clubhouse feel. So what we need is like the ready Justice League that is fighting the good fight. Nobody has got their own titles to, you know, preoccupy them. We're it. And Blue Beetle just decides that's going to be the name. He says, we've got as much claim to it as anyone. So somebody needs to get on that trademark. But and Captain Atom says something about keeping an eye on Wonder Woman and her bunch, as if they're a danger, or they might get into trouble because they're so noobish. I don't know.
Yeah, that part was kind of weird because I kind of felt like they were working for somebody. Extreme Justice might have been created to keep tabs on other superhero groups. Of all the teams, this is the powerhouse team. You know, you have everybody has energy expulsion. Everybody has, except for Blue Beetle, who's the smart one.
Yeah. Well, page 15 is a good example of what you're talking about in terms of power differential here. Because Captain Atom screams, okay, everyone, pour it on! And they're firing in all directions. And they've all got these energy blasting powers. So they're all very similar. Yeah. And then Blue Beetle in that panel is sort of in a crouching position where he's just like trying to protect himself. Like, protect your head.
Yeah, duck and cover.
So I like that little pose. Like, that's one of the drawings, yeah, I do like. But he's totally out of his depth in terms of power levels on this team. So, yeah, he has to be the smart one. He has to bring that, and he has to, like, take control of that base. He's got to be the Brainiac 5 of the group.
I mean, he's doing it. He's hacking into stuff. He's getting information. He's connecting to the internet, and he's doing all that stuff. The rest of the group are basically just powerful superheroes. What they're doing or why they exist, I really don't know yet.
Let's look at that page 10, where a shadowy villain is threatening the group, and we know that that's going to be something. Do you recognize the silhouette?
I can't say that I recognize him.
It's not necessarily clear because maybe they changed the look a bit, but I checked up on it, and it's Stupid Monarch.
Is it Monarch?
Yeah, so exactly the kind of character Zero Hour should have permanently gotten rid of. The future Captain Atom was real. Well, no, he's the future Hawk who should have been the future Captain Atom and is from the future, or a future that no longer exists. Like, Zero Hour was supposed to be addressing all of these weird anomalies that did make sense, that didn't really work, that we don't want to see any more of, including, you know, all the Hawkman stuff and the Monarch stuff. The Monarch stuff should be out. But making him a Captain Atom villain just reminds us that he is Captain Atom, even though DC changed their minds about it. And then maybe he's Captain Atom again, like, you've stolen everything from me. No, why? Oh, this does not bode well for extreme justice. It's
no,
extreme.
No, it does not.
Monarch is like a 90s character, but I don't want to see it. And I don't care about it. The other introduction, I guess, that doesn't really fit with the story we're following is the Ronnie Raymond stuff, because Firestorm later joins this team, as well as Plastique and the Wonder Twins, Zan and Jaina, from the Super Friends cartoon, are introduced into the DC universe and are part of this team eventually.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Ronnie Raymond obviously does not die from cancer, becomes Firestorm again, and probably that absorbs the radiation or something, or saves his life. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I think in this case, he's got a lot more to worry about. Like, he's got the worst hair in the comic.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's not the same from panel to panel. It's just, like, a different horribleness.
Oh, it's very bad. It's hobo hair. He has hobo hair right now. It's asymmetrical. I don't even know what's going on.
No.
Once again, we see a group finding a base. But other than that, we don't really know why they formed.
Yeah. And in this case, just like Justice League America, that base, it's full of threats. So it's a little bit like, oh, then the Justice League, another Justice League that's going to be dealing not with outside threats, not saving the world, but saving their own asses from their own bad real estate decisions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people have roaches if they make bad, you know, or rats or something. These guys, they have like giant robots who are trying to kill them. So, yeah, bad choices. Just
and
bad
even
choices.
If it hadn't still been full of robots or whatever it is, Mount Thunder was supposed to be decommissioned in the 60s. And it's like, well, it's abandoned and maybe we can make use of it. It's a hole in the ground. So they're just trying to like create interest in that. But it's like none of these headquarters are going to be anywhere close to the satellite, to the Happy Harbor, the Justice League Island or whatever. It's not even Justice League Detroit's bunker, you know. It just feel like wrong ideas. And just to make sure that you know that the new era of the Justice League is just like the old era of the Justice League, the mercenaries are sent against them, the peacemakers at the end, sort of a black ops unit that used to be led by Captain Atom. They first appeared in the issue of JLA that made me decide to finally quit the book.
Oh.
So they're a Dan Vado creation. They're totally generic, totally boring. Oh, let's bring them back. It's okay. Like, you want to play with the toys and you've got your own toy chest and all your toys are generic toys made in Mexico, you know, like those off-brand action figures. Yeah. And that's what you're going to keep bringing to the book. It's like, you are not fixing this franchise whatsoever.
No, not at all. Not at all.
It shows how important a writer is.
It really does.
You can bring in like a hot artist. You can like change the art look. Like, this looks really modern for the time, let's say. It's, you know, it's it's what the kids were reading. But if you're not going to change the writer, if like your series are failing, they're considered boring, they're going nowhere, switching them from one book to another, they're still going to be doing the same subpar stuff. Like, maybe those writers can do other things, but they are not good Justice League writers. And they've proven that. And here's your big chance to do something different, and you don't.
Exactly. I mean, instead of Extreme Justice, this would have been a great time to introduce Blue and Gold. Just Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. Just do that instead. And Captain Atom can have his own book, and there's no need for an Extreme Justice.
So in other words, based on this one issue, you would not keep reading this book?
Actually, I would probably pick up another one or two issues just because I like Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. And Amazing Man. I love Amazing Man. But other than that, I really don't think I would.
Okay. Same for me. This did not convince me. Like, the art is a major hurdle for me. Sometimes it's dynamic and fun. Other times when it's doing quiet moments, like Ronnie's, it's just, oh my God, no. No, get it away from me. Like, the characters need to be in motion and you know, being exciting and dynamic, or else it just looks terrible.
Yeah, exactly. It's just too extreme.
There can't be real human moments because it's all got to be costumes and technology and robots and firepower. Whenever it goes, like, into something normal every day, that's where it fails. But in any case, I don't think there's anything left for this era of the Justice League for us. It really needed a real revamp or a return to roots, as what actually happened. And then another great era of the Justice League was launched, and it spawned other titles and characters spun out of it. We've got a couple more, like 2 or 3 years to go before that happens. So in this case, another flop.
Yes.
We'll take a short break. When we return, your feedback on our previous episode.
And action! It's Fade Out, hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests. Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Letters lost in time.
Letters lost in time.
Yes, excerpts from your comments on our coverage of Superboy Steel, The Ray, and Green Arrow numbers 0. David S. Gutierrez was never a fan of any of these books, he says. Never had an inkling to buy an issue of The Ray, and this certainly didn't win me over. Hard pass. That iteration of Superboy always struck me as old people trying to be hip and never felt genuine. I even tried the Raver spinoff, but I'm pretty sure none of the creative team knew what a rave or a raver was. Steel always struck me as better in theory than in execution. Never figured out why he just didn't land for me, but here we are. Iron Man and Hardware are better versions of the character, with the latter finally making a comeback, I believe. Yes. And agreed, the Green Arrow title took its damn time with Connor Hawk, but at least we got a great Green Arrow out of it. Chris Franklin says, however, man, I loved the Kiesel Grummet Superboy series. By the time Jeff Johns got a hold of him for Titans, he was essentially remade into another character, like Bass pointed out. The Kid was definitely a fun, exciting character, and his book was just a blast. I liked the goggles myself, and even put them on a custom Superboy figure I made, created out of a Kenner Michael Keaton Bruce Wayne figure. Speaking of toys, Chris also reminds us that Connor Hawk made it into the Total Justice action figure line.
That's right. That's true. I forgot about that.
I've got the Aquaman. They're figures that you can't really stand up very well because they got like these thin, thin, extreme legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diablo Frank was unimpressed with the Ray. It was a sleeper hit based on debuting hot new find Joe Quesada. And so, of course, DC decides to spin it off into an ongoing with none of the original creative team 2 years later. Still, I definitely liked all the stuff with the Martian Manhunter, but the rest of the issue was buried in teen angst, melodrama, and jibber jabber. As for Green Arrow number 0, he says, I liked all the zen in the 0 issues. I appreciated that Connor Hawk was a handsome, heroic-looking lad whose features were also unmistakably non-white. I didn't feel any confusion in Kelly Puckett's story. Oliver never shot the arrow. Everyone was awed by his presence, posture, and authority. It's like Prince, who doesn't need to actually strum the love cymbal guitar. Your heart would skip a beat just for his picking it up by the neck and slinging it. I felt the potential here and stuck with it. Anyway, I never forgave DC for reviving Oliver Queen, especially the way they went about it, and I've barely read any Green Arrow comics in the near quarter century since the cancellation. It was on the vanguard of rolling back progressive representation in favor of lionizing straight white guys like it was 1965. Michael Bailey says, having recently reread both Superboy and Steel, it's amazing how different they both were. Both were full of tropes from the era they came out in, just on different ends of the 90s spectrum. Superboy was a fun book full of colorful villains, a great supporting cast, and a solid premise that would carry the title for several years. Steel was almost an image book with technology-enhanced paramilitary villains that just never gelled because there wasn't much to them. If I told you that Hazard's Black Ops group was comprised of characters named Shellshock, Hotspot, Quake, Cybernet, and Flatline, you probably would assume that they were just all legit names, despite the fact that I made up the name Cybernet just now. The next armor upgrade, which came along in 1996, brought back the S symbol, so Bass was on to something there. And Captain Entropy feels the steel arc with the magically appearing armor seem to be trying to turn him into DC's Venom. Meanwhile, Connor Hawk is great, and I love his JLA intro issues you mentioned where he's fighting the key. I remember Connor looking at Ollie's old boxing arrow in a display case, his only option after his other arrows were gone, thinking, oh dad, you'll be the death of me. It was a great moment, building tension and giving us a laugh simultaneously. See you next time. How many more of these we got? I have that feeling I get when I've been eating popcorn for a while and before I even look down, I suspect the bowl is almost empty. Or when you're a kid and you're reflecting on how great the summer has been and then you realize school must be coming soon. Well, this goes to episode 33. This is 27, so there's six more?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so there's six more. We got 6 months to go after this point. And then we'll be doing other projects. Stay tuned.
Whew.
On that note, we have to mention that the Fire & Water Podcast Network has a Patreon page. If you like our content, please think about making a one-time or monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Get on the zero list at patreon.com/FWPodcast. Just like these fine folks did. They got on the zero list. They are going to escape the cataclysmic time wave that's coming from both ends of history. Jim Bal has been saved from a Viking ship and its angry Viking prince. David Capoon has been saved from Bloodhaven long before the whole 1 year later debacle. Michael Bailey has been saved from the command bunker D before he could help with a special birth. Diablo Frank has been saved from the mad, mad world of Meta, which is not a Facebook joke, folks. And new sponsor Spindrift Games has been saved from the tiny cocoon lair of Mr. Mind. A reminder that you can leave comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also follow Fire & Water's Facebook page and Twitter. The account is FW Podcasts. You can also find the podcast on Spotify. Anyway, find it where you can. You've already found it. You're listening to this.
You're here. Look at us. We're here. Next time, Siskoid destroys the Justice League.
That was this time.
Next time on Zero Hour Strikes, the Green Lanterns and Dark Stars.